Okay, well, I show 6:30, so I guess I get to go ahead and use the gavel and start us off. I'll start by, well, welcoming our board members who are here, and they will get started as soon as we approve the agenda, which hopefully everybody has in front of them. Anybody have any objections to any or suggested changes to anything that is on the agenda? Okay, anything else on the agenda, or this page at least? Hearing no objections, we're going to consider the agenda approved, and then moving on to the minutes, which are immediately behind that. I had one comment on there, which was in Section 6, the approval of past meeting minutes. It references that we approved the February 2017 meeting minutes, which would have been hard to do given that it was the February 2017 meeting. So with the change of that to approving the January meeting minutes, did anybody else see anything in the meeting minutes that needs to be changed before we approve them? All right, motion to approve.
Aye. Second.
Excellent. Any objections to approving the meeting minutes? Then with that out of the way, I will go ahead and turn it over to our board members because I'm sure they've had long days too and would like to go ahead and talk to us.
Thank you. I'm Mike Goldman. I'm the board member from Maryland. I'm from Montgomery County, appointed by the governor. My colleague is Christian Dorsey from the great state of Virginia, city of Arlington.
County of Arlington, Mike. I've got to work with you, man.
I serve this year as chair of the finance committee, and Christian serves as one of vice chairs on the committee. And we'll start. I know you want to talk about the budget, but I thought as a preliminary, I'd give you some background because I think the last time I visited with the RAC, I remember Bob Fogel, but most of you are new faces since the last time, so I thought I'd give you some little background and overview of where WMATA's finances sit. But before we get started, I would love to know each of you as to who you are, where you're from, and what you do when you don't sit around as a RAC member. So, Madam Chairman, if you can introduce your members or let them do the same, I think we'd both appreciate that.
Certainly. We can start by going around the table. Yvette, do you want to start? And then we'll circle back to us.
My name is Heath Dovon. I represent the District of Columbia. I'm also the chair of the RAC's Budget and Finance Committee, so it's really nice to meet you both. In my day job, I do civil rights and discrimination work at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Great. Let's hope you keep your job.
Hi, my name is Nick Bertoni. I represent Fairfax County from Reston, Virginia. My day job, I manage a panel for people for social policy research for a nonprofit.
I'm Valerie Cook. I'm from the not state of Washington, D.C. Happy to be a state. Would encourage your support during the day. I'm one of your federal employees. I work at HHS.
Hello, gentlemen. I'm Will White, representing Prince George's County. I work as a massage therapist, self-employed, and I also spend a lot of volunteer time around town, including being a member of the College Park Rotary Club.
Hello, my name is Joe, and I'm a DC member on the RAC, and I'm a fellow at the Department of Education, and I love massively open online courses.
Colin Rouge, I live in DC, but I'm an at-large member, and
You nominate the group.
Most of my life has been in public service at the city, county, state, and federal levels, customer service and intergovernmental relations.
I'm Bob Vogel from Montgomery County, and my background is in transportation policy.
Thank you. I thought we'd start with...
You can hear from our...
Oh, the chair, I'm sorry.
Chair.
Oh, these two. I'm Catherine Cordham. I live in D.C., and I, when I'm not here, I work for the Transportation Research Board. I have a background in research and academia.
Hi, my name is Clarence Winters. I am the vice chair for D.C., and I live... I live in D.C. My day job, I'm a business manager at Georgetown University.
Thank you. Terrific. I put together just a few slides to just give you some background on WMATA's financing. So the first slide just shows you what is the long-term source of one of our problems, the ridership and the revenue. Revenue comes from ridership. Ridership peaked in fiscal year 2009 and has been going down since then. That's probably a product of a number of factors. It's probably a product of the size of the federal government, the caps on federal employment coming along and with sequestration following the Great Recession. On top of that, we've had changes to the workplace and where people work, greater reliance on telework, movement of jobs further out into the suburbs, retirement of the federal workforce that were longtime riders of the system who lived in Montgomery County, Prince George's County, and Fairfax County. They, of my generation, are either retired or have passed away, and new people replacing them, to the extent that the federal government is hiring, tend to live closer in. More recently, the decline is probably attributed to the Lanfan Plaza accident and the perception of people that the system isn't as safe. It's not as reliable as it used to be, and it's not as operationally efficient. And as you can see, the decline is both in the peak weekday as well as in the off-peak. The off-peak decline is, as you can see, is steeper and largely reflects the fact that over the past 5-6 years, a lot of the work that's been done has been done over the weekend, and so delays and single tracking have been bigger problems that have affected the weekend than during the week, and people have many more options available over the weekend, Uber, driving, bikes, staying home. So ridership, big problem. Next slide. But at the same time, while ridership and revenue has declined, expenses keep going up, function both of inflation. A big part of the increase a couple years ago was the expansion of the Silver Line, which required both adding additional employees, probably about 500 to 1,000 employees. And, of course, you're running a lot of trains on a lot greater distance, and that runs up operating costs as well. The current budget is at $1.77 billion in this fiscal year, FY 2017, the year that'll end June 30th. And as we'll get to, even as ridership and revenue decline, the budget keeps going up. And so the budget forecast for this fiscal year they're working on, that begins July 1, is at $1.8 billion. That next slide sort of shows you that budget that you're looking at right now, what the total increases would look like. I guess it's good to point out that fare revenue only covers about 50% of the expenses of the system, so that other 50% in very broad numbers is made up of that line across the bottom, net subsidy. So as you can see, at least in these in these projections, it looks like the fare revenue is actually less than 50%, since the revenue is projected at $841 million with expenses, with subsidy at $975 million.
And as you can see, the net increase in subsidy for the jurisdictions for this budget year coming up is a increase of $130 million, which is a very substantial increase, 15% from year over year. The next slide, five, gives you an idea of what the general manager was grappling with in putting together a budget for this fiscal year. Now we have slide five. The general manager looked at this and found that there was about a $290 million gap between projected revenues and expenses, and how we proposed to close that gap was these little circles surrounding the 290. Basically, if you start from the top, and I guess we can go clockwise, savings from management and labor, mostly some reductions in health insurance contribution. Essentially, employees were going to make up a greater contribution for their health insurance. But the big chunk of that is really a reduction of positions aimed at about 500 positions total for the year. 300 come from the reduction of service cuts, which we'll get to. The next little circle, FTA grants, reflects the fact that the federal government allows transit systems to use their federal grants, which are principally for capital use, for preventive maintenance as well. So to the extent that preventive maintenance has traditionally been considered an operating expense, it essentially allows you to use part of that federal money in your operating budget. Traditionally, WMATA, the board, has limited the amount of FDA grants used for preventive maintenance in the operating budget at $30 million. We went adrift in this current year, FY17, and decided on a one-time basis to use about $95 million for preventive maintenance, and we're bringing that down in this fiscal year to $60 million. With the idea that we will eventually get back to the sort of long-term policy of $30 million.
It should be noted it's not because there's anything wrong, illegal, or unethical about it, but certain people view that as not a desirable practice, and they want to hold WMATA's future funding streams and other potential measures to meeting that metric.
So just going back and going counterclockwise a minute, the riders figure of $50 million is composed of the package of service cuts and fare increases that have probably exercised you the most over the past few months. The fare increase part of that is $21 million for both bus and rail, and the service cuts are $29 million for a total of $50 million. And so what you have with everybody, those parties, those stakeholders, bearing part of the burden, employees, federal government, and the riders. What's left is for the jurisdictions to make up the difference. And the three components from Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. add up to the $130 million, which is the subsidy increase that you saw on the prior slide. So that's sort of where we are. I got one more slide just to tell you what we're thinking about. We're going the other way. There we go. Yeah, that was the one we wanted. One more. That's it. Hold that one. So where we are in the timetable, where we're going to have a meeting next week at the Finance Committee, March 9th, and if we seem like we're coming together on consensus, then we would take a vote of the Finance Committee approving the budget, and that would then lead to final approval by the full board on March 23rd, adopting the budget. Right now, in this month that we're going into, we find that we have about $23 million to work with. That's a $23 million that's produced by movement of expenses for rail car parts into the capital budget. The staff, I guess, fortuitously billed that $23 million in both the operating and the capital budget for the board to choose. So by letting it stay in the capital budget, we essentially have a $23 million flexibility to work with in the operating budget. So what are we going to do with that $23 million? I think based on what we heard at the public hearing, where most of the sentiment was on bus service, I think we heard a lot more on bus service than we heard on rail service, probably looking at some reduction in the number of bus routes that are out there to be cut, and bring back that group a little bit. I think on the fare increase side, there's some concern about the lowest income riders, and we're trying to figure out some solution to, I guess, reduce the pain on those riders. On the rail service side, we heard a lot of complaints, especially about the off-peak hours. And so I think we're looking at trying to restore some of that service in the off-peak hours, where the sort of times between trains were at very large numbers of minutes. And so restore some of that to the current service levels for red line riders and people in Montgomery County. One of the big concerns was a proposal to add Grosvenor turnbacks to the off-peak hours. So I think we're looking at keeping it as it is rather than increasing the number of turnbacks, because turnbacks, even in the peak hours, are scheduled to end sometime in FY18 as more of the new 7,000 series rail cars come aboard. The other thing is that a couple months ago when the board adopted the new hours of service through 1 a.m., we also voted to approve some new nighttime lifeline bus service, so there'd be some all-night bus service. So part of the $23 million will go to funding that initiative, as well as some mandates on safety that we've gotten from the Federal Transit Administration. So that's sort of where we're heading, and I think that's what you'll hear about at the next Finance Committee meeting. So that's the operating budget. At the same time, next slide, please. We also will be looking at the capital budget. Essentially, we'll be looking at approving that capital budget for the fiscal year 2018 at $1.25 billion. And that's an increase over last year, but it's not historically the budgets have been aiming for spending roughly about $1 million to $1.2 million annually. The other numbers give you an idea of what things look like in the out years, but the only thing we'll be voting on that are binding are the numbers for FY18. As you can see, the large part of that budget is really the purchase of rolling stock, the rail cars. The new 7,000 rail cars are coming in now at a level of about 16 to 20 months, which explains the big bump in the rail car expenses over the next 2-3 years. And there's also a big increase in the bus purchases, which you'll see in the bus and transit vehicle account. Most of the other expenses you see there in track and structures and rail systems reflect the safe track work and the continuing work that will be done over weekends and in the off-peak periods during the day. And you'll see signal tracking there, too, as the general manager turns his attention to the underground system. Most of safe tracks was directed at the above-ground system or the at ground-level system. So there's still a good deal of work to be done. And I'll stop there and see if my colleague wants to add anything. Perspective from Virginia.
Yeah, you know, we're working together on this, so there's not really a jurisdictional approach to the budget for all of the reasons that Michael outlined. You know, we are where we are, and this is the hand that we're dealt. Whatever the contributing factors, I know they've been described to you as existential or otherwise, it's the hand we're dealt. And, you know, it requires on some level that we look at everything, and that's why I think you had a general manager's budget that looked at all of the discrete areas at which WMATA can either raise revenue or save expenses. And, you know, it was often described as a share the pain budget. You know, I think it bears emphasizing that it wasn't just an effort to take a little bit from everywhere just so that no one area felt particularly aggrieved. It was really an approach to look at what could sensibly be done given WMATA's needs. And although it's unpopular, you know, fares had not been adjusted, have not been adjusted for 3 years despite WMATA's longstanding policy to revisit them every 2 years. And I think the way that you all have deliberated about it, coming to the conclusion that, you know, fare increases, while not desirable, are understandable given the current context. What's been very gratifying to me is that that's been shared, I think, by the wider community. I haven't heard really a lot of pushback on this whole concept of no fare increases, period. There has been an acute concern about what the impact would be on low-income riders, and I think what we're going to see come out, we shouldn't really scoop what is unveiled next week, but it will be an attempt to speak specifically to that issue, to provide an option for low-income, particularly bus riders, to essentially be held harmless. And I think that will be a great way towards being responsible as not just an agency that runs trains and buses, but also recognizing that we are a part of a community with people of different socioeconomic means. So more to come on that. I'd just like to applaud you all for the good guidance that you have given in terms of looking at the budget. And, you know, we heard you loud and clear with the service impacts of the cuts, particularly on the bus side. I have to, you know, just speaking only for myself, I think the bus cuts as proposed were less careful and thoughtful than they ought to have been. It was really just kind of looking at numbers there and not really impact. And from riders, we were really hearing about the impact and seeing that there were a significant number of places where people didn't have reasonable transit alternatives who Metro was leaving left out in the cold. And that's just, it's unacceptable. It's not just about, you know, you can't just look simply at performance metrics to decide levels of bus service when no other options exist. So I think the package that will be put together at you know, costs that have to be picked up elsewhere are to make sure we don't leave people without other transit options, that the reductions on the rail side due to service hours to get that preventive maintenance program in place are augmented with what we're calling lifeline bus service so that people who critically need this to get to and from their places of employment, for example, do have a transit option on the bus side. So I'm pretty proud, even though it's not a budget that I, as an elected official, would love. You know, it's asking people to pay more. You know, it's asking not only users to pay more, it's asking the general public to pay more. And at the same time, we're going to be delivering less. That's not really an ideal combination. But Metro is in a state where, for too long, it was too challenging for people to make those difficult choices. And, you know, maybe perhaps the sort of silver lining in Metro getting to a point where it could no longer afford that is that I think the board is working with the general manager to do what needs to be done. And that's why your guidance is especially important, because I am ever mindful, despite what we talk about in terms of budget numbers or governing policy for Metro, there's only one reason why we run the transit system, and that is to allow people who live in our region to move around. That's the only reason. Otherwise, we don't exist. That's the mission of WMATA. And if we are not mindful of making sure that our impact on riders and the input from riders on how this agency is serving them are really at the forefront of what we do, we're not going to really succeed in our mission. So with that, I look forward to a healthy discussion.
Okay, I see that Valerie has led us off with the vertical name tags.
Oh, I like that. We'll do that. Oh, that's outstanding. That's all right.
Put that recommendation in your next report.
Just as one point of clarification,
This is just a real clarification question. On your capital investment by year, could you talk to me a little bit about business support as a capital investment and what that is and why it's important?
It includes a lot of things, a lot of technology investments, some consultant services. It is, you know, as WMATA looks at managing what's the proper headcount to have for this agency versus the critical jobs that need to be performed and investments that need to be made in areas ranging from cybersecurity to looking at next generation fare payments to implementing the safety directives that we have, both mandated and that we would like to do to advance the system. Those are kind of all in that business support area. But if you're responding to, you know, the growth in that area at the expense of some of the others, it's something that the board, I think, has picked at a lot to make sure the GM is scrubbing that as much as possible, that we're not just simply you know, saying that we're realizing savings in headcount and then putting it into consultants to do the same work, that we're being really prudent in how we spend that, and it's not just, you know, kind of a slush fund to do things that you otherwise don't want to present for public deliberation. So we ask about that a lot, and, you know, we could go into greater detail. We've drilled down for at least the FY18 capital budget and are fairly, I think, satisfied with what's being planned. But I think every year it's going to be incumbent on us to make sure that doesn't become, you know, what lesser properties would use as a slush fund.
All right, on the risk of stamping on too many toes, we spent a lot of time last year talking about alternative fare payment models, and we were told that there's been a lot of capital already spent in that. We're not interested in looking at that. Is that changed? Am I misunderstanding that there is an interest to look at the fares being paid different ways?
I don't know what you mean by different ways. If you mean like this, pay this way?
So there was a test facility or a test station. Some of you guys can remember that. And this group was asked to follow through on that. There was a lot of complications with the test, and then someone said, hey, test stopped. We're not going to go this way. Too much capital's already been spent on our fare machines. We're just going to keep it.
Yeah, there were two things going on there. One was that that whole test and that whole was generated by a belief that new payment methods were coming along, that smartphones and things other than people using a Metro card, being able to pay with a MasterCard. But it turned out that, at least currently, information out there is that the systems that have tried it still have very low levels of participation in these new fangled payment methods, smartphones and credit cards. People, for whatever reason, still tend to use their Metro card. And they sort of like it. And so that was one factor of, well, should we rush into this or should we let the issue develop a little more out there? Second of all, with the test that was run, I had a lot of problems with that test because it was so few people ever participated in the test, and no one participated with their own smartphone. They were given a smartphone by the test organizers, and I just didn't feel that those 500,000 people, that was a good enough sampling to want to go forward and make a substantial investment in new technology. So we essentially backed off. One of the other considerations is that going forward, new technology is not just a metro expense. It turns out that the same technology has to be adopted by the regional bus systems, Ride-On in Montgomery County, Arlington, ARC system. You know, and so the people who run those systems said, well, prove to us that this is going to work before you require us to make this kind of big investment in our system as well, because it means, you know, taking the guts out and replacing in every bus what's the, you know, the vehicle there, the reader there for card payment. So a combination of those three factors led the board and the general manager to back off and essentially use the cubic system we have, try and upgrade it for the next 5, to 7 years while we see how the marketplace develops with new fare-paying technology.
And to be sure, in the future, at some point, touchless technology will mature and this become possible. And the whole idea that you have the ability to pay with any form of payment that you have is going to be something that will support growth in ridership. So, you know, clearly there's a desirable goal at some point, but Metro got way too far ahead of where technology was. And quite frankly, not only did it not work as desired, it being an early adopter, we were going to pay a premium for it. So, you know, thank goodness there was a step back to say, let this all mature. We don't need to be the first in the country to sort of lead with this, or we don't need to be among the first. We can wait until this is tried and true technology because, you know, this smart card works for riders. You know, that said, the vendor that we have that we work with limits our flexibility to do innovative things with fares, whether it be, you know, creating fare holidays where that instantaneously reflects in your balances so that you can actually, like, feel like you're getting a deal, for example. We don't have that flexibility that other places have. So, you know, I hope we get there at some point. But given everything else that we're dealing with, I'm glad we pulled the brakes on doing the experimental thing.
A brief interlude before we get to the next questions, because we've got two more RAC members who have arrived around the table. And just so that you know who you're talking to, Richard and then Pat, you want to introduce yourselves? Just to say who you are, where you're from, and what you do during the day.
My name is Pat Sheehan. I'm from Silver Spring, Maryland. I work for Department of Veterans Affairs as a 508 IT specialist. And I also chair the Accessibility Advisory Committee. I've been doing that for a while, so we are a sister committee to the RAC, and we try to coordinate. I think we do a good job of coordinating activities between the riders and disability community, so we come up with joint recommendations before the board and amongst the committees. So thank you.
Patrick is very familiar to all the board members.
My name is Richard Ezeki. I'm from Fairfax County. I currently live in Kingstown. I currently work for the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation as a transportation policy analyst. Just recently joined the RAC last month, so glad to be here. And, of course, I've met Councilman Dorsey many times, so
good to see
you again, sir.
Indeed.
I realize I'll let you buy my pocket from before me, so I can let them go first.
Go for it.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's really insightful to hear your thoughts, and we really appreciate your time being here. My question has to do with the board's thought process with regards to bus routes. Obviously, as you said, that's been you know, a big issue. And in the letter that we sent to you, one of the topics that we pointed out, sort of thinking about the various ways that we want to sort of prioritize bus stops, whether it's subsidy per rider or impact in terms of, you know, how many riders it serves, transit alternatives. So can you elaborate a little bit more on what the board will be doing to kind of look at the bus routes on the chopping block, you know, figure out how many in the end do have to be eliminated or do have to face service cuts, and sort of share any kind of rough numbers there, or just sort of your method of prioritizing which ones.
Sure. Just picking up on Christian's thought, the original number, which is about 17 or 18 million, was the number targeted from bus route reductions, was a finance committee, not finance committee, this finance committee, but a finance function within WMATA. And so that was what produced the initial list. I think in response to that list, the board, for the public hearing process, expanded the list so that it looked like we were cutting more buses, but we really weren't. We were really just putting more bus routes sort of in play for cuts, and those suggestions of what else to put in play came from another number of the local bus route operators. I know on the Maryland side, it came from Ride-On in Montgomery County and the Prince George's County bus operation, as well as from the state, which operates some of the bus routes involved as well. I think at this point, the general manager has looked at that, and he's trying to look at saving bus routes where they would be sort of the last bus route that someone, he doesn't want to cut people off from kind of a single ride or a single seat type of operation. So I think as we try to reduce the total number of bus routes cut, you know, we'll be trying to restore, I don't want to give an exact number because I think that's still in flux, but it, you know, with the total cut is going to be less than 17 million. You know, it's probably going to end up in the range of 10 to 15 million, and so we'll be restoring 5 to 6 million in bus routes out there.
Yeah, and I think the jurisdictions are taking the lead because, you know, they know best how these bus routes are working in their particular communities, and ultimately the subsidy level falls in the jurisdiction. So they're kind of taking the lead on saying, okay, for example, you know, the 16 bus lines in Arlington, Virginia, which are you know, highly popular, they're often very full. You know, let's look at not reducing that service because that's clearly serving a need that is unmet in other ways. So I think different jurisdictions are applying different criteria, but I think generally you first look at, are there other affordable transit options available? If there are, that gives you a certain amount of leeway, I think, to reduce or even ultimately eliminate service. Then you want to look at, in my opinion, the ability for local service to pick up the difference that WMATA is not able to perform. Some of our jurisdictions have local bus service that is robust. If that is an option that is available, that may make trimming some service possible. Perhaps the worst metric is simply to look at subsidy per rider or, you know, cost per mile. Those don't tell you anything about the qualitative nature of the bus route. You know, for example, there are lots of highly productive bus routes that have lots of other transit options that people could use for whatever reason. They're densely populated or it's cheaper than those other transit alternatives, so they become something that people use just because it's there. Doesn't necessarily mean that it ought to be there to that same frequency, nor should that be what you compare to a route that has relatively less efficient service, but is the only way to get people from you know, a housing location to job centers. So I think each jurisdiction is going to apply their own metrics and come up with a much better balance than what the finance team at Metro came up with.
Let me just add, just to give you sort of a microscope, a particular example. You know, we have these two bus routes that go to Dulles Airport as well as the one that goes to BWI. Both of these are fascinating exercises because on the one that goes to Dulles, you know, you have the Silver Line that goes out there, and then that connects with a bus route from Wheelie Reston that goes to the airport. On the other hand, on the B30, which is the one, you know, you've got train service and you've got MTA, the Maryland runs another bus out there. But there's always groups that love these routes. For the one that goes to Dulles, it's the people that work out there, the TSA workers and the airport baggage handlers, because the Silver Line doesn't start early enough to get them to Dulles, you know, in time. So they rely on this, you know, bus route. So, you know, until the Silver Line goes out to Dulles and until we decide what the hours are going to be, there's a real equity case for keeping that bus route in effect, even though there's alternatives that seem to be very attractive for people to use.
And it's grossly inefficient, but it only serves people who work there, right? Nobody else is using that. Like, nobody's getting on that bus.
No tourist is going to go on that bus.
it's the predominant number of people or folks who actually have to be there and have to be there with some degree of time certainty.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I think I've been getting these in chronological order, but I might be wrong, so I'm going to go to Colin next.
Yes. So we talked a little bit about the kind of long-term trends, external factors, you know, reliability that have kind of, you know, compounded over the years to bring us to this situation. But, you know, reliability is a function of many things, including, you know, maintenance and you know, what we've come to know over the past few years is, you know, we've had this long trend of deferred maintenance, poor acquisition practices, been done had to be done over again. All of these things, you know, cost a lot of money over the long term. So I'm wondering, you know, kind of what, you know, aside from what GM we developed kind of has referenced in terms of trying to change the culture, what formal mechanisms might be at, you know, the organization's disposal to address these things, and what role should or is the Office of Inspector General playing, for example?
Yeah, I think part of your question, to rephrase this really, is there light at the end of the tunnel? And I think the answer to that is yes, there are initiatives underway which we would hope by the end of next year, or beginning this fall, this year, 2017, where you'll see results. I think part of that is the new 7,000 rail cars, which are both, after an initial tough time, seem to be now operating as they were expected to operate, and that they will be a big improvement, and the ridership is reacting very well to them. It's not just that the reaction of the 7,000 cars is good, but that they're replacing a series of cars that have problems. The 1,000s were the accordions that we need to get out for safety reasons, and the 3 and the 4,000 have some of the highest repair rates in the fleet, the highest in the fleet right now. So as the 7,000s come in to replace them, you're going to get a more reliable system, and you're going to get a more, I guess, more on-time system. You know, right now we're pulling cars out because we don't have enough to meet the needs every day, which had been a number of about 754 rail cars in peak hours. It's probably something a little less than that. But as we get into this budget year and we reduce the number of rail cars that are needed for the system, we should be able to get more trains out there every day, on time, and 8-car trains, rather than what you see now is, you know, there's an 8-car train, and there's a 6-car train, another 6-car train, and then you're waiting 5 minutes for the next train. We should be able to, I'm speaking in terms of a red line rider, come out there in peak area where you have 8-car trains coming every 3 minutes, and
okay.
That would be a big,
all right. All right. Wait
that
a
would be a big improvement.
I guess I'm speaking more to kind of the institutional culture and the need for appropriate oversight.
I mean, if I could speak to that for just a second, you know, Metro is, there are a few things. I think one, you know, part of the capital investments for business support, for example, are to have a decent system for managing parts and capital assets and making sure you kind of know what you got and you can efficiently deploy what you have, and it's at the right warehouse when a particular vehicle is there for repair. Those are all relatively, or not relatively, they are very, we have performed poorly in those areas. So there's a great deal of work that needs to be done there. You've often heard talk about the safety culture, which we've been starting to wrap our heads around because it's always sounded kind of squishy and amorphous, but here's kind of a real-life manifestation of it. We have heard very clearly from Metro employees that they are reluctant to bring to their supervisors, for whatever reason, I'm not assigning blame, just describing the circumstance, issues that they identify as safety concerns or ethical concerns about practices that they're supposed to implement. That's, the GM has got to fix whatever is causing all of that. It certainly predates him, but it's his responsibility to fix it because it completely, from a governing perspective, it is unacceptable that we could have apparently the talent in place to recognize where we may be falling short, but somehow that doesn't work its way into an operational plan to fix it. So that's another area. And then the third, this is not to dismiss any of the other two things that I've said, which I think are quite serious, but I also think this third one is serious as well. Everything that happens bad at Metro is magnified 1,000%, particularly relative to other transit properties, in the sense that most of what we talk about with Metro, other places go through all the time. It's not to say that we shouldn't worry about it, we should, but I think perspective is often lost in our Metro, in our region, that anything that happens with Metro is unprecedented and unprecedentedly bad. And that's not exactly the case, and is not helpful in terms of figuring out exactly you know, what you can do. And really, this was eye-opening for me because I counted myself among those people who just couldn't believe how incredibly feckless we were as a transit system. And, you know, I was in Philadelphia. Michael and I were both there at the same time. It's July. And as part of that, talking to some people in the SEPTA system and hearing about, you know, their sort of short-term evolution over the last 3 years and realizing, oh, wow, you all have it a bit worse than we do. And it was just sort of an eye-opener to me that as much as we have reporting on Metro and we talk about Metro as if, how is this possible, it's actually quite common across transit properties. But we're the nation's capital's transit system, so we need to be better. I'm not absolving ourselves of that, but we do need to occasionally put it all into perspective and realize this is a struggle for a lot of properties.
All right, now in respect for the council members' time and our agenda, the four people who are still remaining to speak, we are officially going into lightning round.
And we'll respond in lightning fashion, since we tend, Mike and I tend to be long-winded. Sorry.
We just want to make sure you can get out of here. Clarence.
So I guess the question that I have, I'll try to keep fast, is about the sustainability of Metro, not in terms of like the environment part, but just looking at Metro long-term, because from everything that I've seen today, it seems that we're going to be in exactly the same place next year, with lower ridership and higher expenses, and then having these same conversations over and over again. And, you know, I obviously don't have to represent people in the same way that you do in terms of that pushback, in terms of how people, this is the one line that they have, but how does Metro look in sort of scenes that, like, what can they expect to be a regular, consistent amount of guaranteed riders to expect, and how do they, from a budget perspective, match services to what they're coming into revenues? Because it doesn't seem as if Metro is in a position to be serving as a utility to people where it doesn't matter the cost of what they're coming in, but providing services as opposed to running on what they're generating in revenue. So that's just sort of the long-term question I have. I guess it's going to be great to see, like, as the 7,000 series take up more account boards, it's going to be less, but it doesn't seem like it's going to fundamentally change a broken system.
Yeah, I'll give a perspective just from there's a couple things that I think work with this. There is this... Metro has suffered from an inadequacy of funding that was masked by faster than expense growth increase in ridership. The problem has been there fundamentally for a while. However, it was masked, and people could avoid looking at the long-term and systemic funding issues because ridership was kind of picking it up. Now that that is not the case, there needs to be, unlike most other transit properties, some sort of a multi-jurisdictional funding stream that is not simply the general funds of the state of Maryland, the Commonwealth of Virginia, and its contributing jurisdictions and the D.C. City Council. That's just, it's all too messy, and it allows for any of the three or all three at the same time, if they're experiencing other pressures, to say, yeah, we can't. But if we had a consistent and fair funding stream, that would really help systematically a lot. And then secondly, I think the jurisdictions have to continue doing what they're doing, make sure their land use policies incentivize high-density development near metro stations, because even if we see decreased mode splits where people are doing Uber, Lyft, and biking and walking, if you've got more people, you're going to get more riders. And I think that commitment to marrying land use with transit policy and then dedicated funding gives Metro the fundamental backbone for how it sustains itself long into the future.
Yeah, three quick comments in response to your question, just to add to what Christian said. One, I would hope that when SafeTrack ends in June, we're going to see riders coming back to the system. It's probably going to take a few months before that takes effect, but I would hope that we're, at least for this next fiscal year, FY18, we've at least plateaued out and we don't continue to see loss of riders. Second of all, we do have to look at other revenue sources because the jurisdictions are sort of capped out at this point. So as you've seen some stories in the paper of naming rights, I think we're going to have to take a harder look at naming stations, naming trains, naming services as a way to bring in money. It's kind of advertising, and so it goes right into revenue each year and funnels that way. Patrick is very much aware of the activities going underway Metro Access to try and move some of the riders to kind of Uber and Lyft, these kind of rider services who don't need the, who are ambulatory and don't need the sort of standard Metro Access service, which is a way to both reduce some of that cost. And I think we're looking at a number of options in the parking lots areas, which is a potential revenue source, both in terms of sort of differential pricing. We've got parking lots out there that are at 100%, and we've got others that are at 50%. We charge the same thing. You've seen, if you're paying attention, at Strathmore, we're going to start a pilot allowing sales of food and drink adjacent to metro properties. No reason why that can't be expanded. Maybe people want to have a Starbucks there. Maybe people want a newsstand, people a dry cleaner. Yeah, maybe there's things there where we can find additional sources of revenue. The third point I want to make is, though, that we are going into a period where the next two budget years after this one, after FY18, are still going to be tough years. The reason for that is, one, the expansion of the Silver Line all the way out to Dulles, which means more operating costs, hiring more people. We'll see where the ridership forecasts for that end up. And we're in the midst of a arbitration with our largest union, 689. And so once that's resolved, there's not only going to be a spike up in compensation going forward, but there's a catch-up period. There's a clawback for this year and the prior year of increased costs. So we're going to have a hump here for the next year, 2 years as well, once we get through this current fiscal year, FY18. I missed the game yesterday with the with the Wizards and the and the Golden State Warriors.
I saw that in LA. And speaking of that, I'm a federal employee, and I know Congress appropriates funds to agencies that subsidize funds for federal employees to take WMATA. What happens to those funds? Like, I was in LA for 2 weeks. I didn't use WMATA for 2 weeks. What happens to those funds? Are those is that revenue captured already, or does it already is? Okay.
No. No,
it's not.
That's right.
So it get reversed back to Treasury, or what happens to that?
Yeah, so smart benefits, most of them, the way they're constructed, if you don't use it, it's lost. So WMATA doesn't capture that revenue.
How can we capture that revenue? Like, are there ways? Certainly there are ways to, like if you tap or donated those funds to certain charities, or, how can we capture that revenue? And also,
I don't want to violate federal law by getting too deeply into this.
Find ways not just to improve Metro, but to create revenue generation that would, help get us to a more fiscally sustainable or just sustainable way. I know the vendors you talked about, the fair vendors, when will that flexibility occur with the fair gates? And what's beyond this budget horizon? the vision wise, I know it's at 8 cents,
I think we can address this.
Last year, the board commissioned a study by McKinsey, and it's somewhere on the WMATA website. I encourage you all to take a look at it, because there's a lot of ideas in there for how to save money and what WMATA can do to increase revenue. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about some of them in terms of Metro Access, parking lots, selling this building. Improvements in management practices, pension issues, but there's a lot of ideas out there, and we've only skimmed the top of beginning to implement some of them at WMATA.
Like, that's for free, or you could get a prize or incentives that way, but, instead of paying hundreds of thousands to consultants, which is great, too, that's another thing.
But, some of it's also difficult to achieve. There's no shortage of solutions to a lot of these issues that have been posited and researched by groups for years. And you know, I think it's always up to people to decide which ones they think are more efficacious and more feasible. You know, a lot of people will talk about, well, just, you know, change the compact and get rid of binding arbitration. And that's like a popular one. I'm not making it up. That's what we hear from the folks in the Commonwealth of Virginia, the Federal City Council, other groups. And, you know, it seems to ignore the fact that there's federal transit law, which, you know, prohibits you from, you know, rescinding collective bargaining agreements where they exist. And, you know, part of the cost of having binding arbitration is also that you have no strike, no lockout provisions, which you're not going to get if you don't get it. So, you know, there's a whole lot of people with ideas that are not really fully fleshed out within the context of what it would actually mean. And, you know, a personal frustration for me is getting through the noise to actually get at the one solution that we all know will work. Let's have dedicated financing that comes from each of the jurisdictions at a sufficient level to provide sustainability. It's really that simple. And if we did that, a lot of this other stuff, not that it would completely work itself out, but it would be, I mean, it would advance the ball a lot. So, yeah.
Question. So just one question.
One question in six parts with several subsections.
No, I won't.
You're a lawyer, right, Paul? Yeah, we know what one question means.
Your personnel on your budget has $1.2 billion for FY18. I was listening to Jack Evans on NPR a few months ago talk about one of the elephants in the room for WMATA is the pension obligation. To what extent does this $1.2 billion help to address that, if at all? So that's still an elephant in the room, regardless of the numbers that we have here.
Yeah, let me just break that down. There's two areas of unfunded liability out there. One is what you've described as the pension area. The other area is what's called other post-employment benefits, which are basically health insurance benefits. The on the pension side, WMATA follows, I guess, industry general accounting standards, and you know, and while it's not fully funded, the current funding levels, I'm advised by our actuaries, are within a range that's reasonable. You know, that even though we haven't fully funded all the benefits that are out there, what we've done is consistent with industry standards practices. On the health benefit side, that's a liability which is totally known because the amount was cut off for future employees. So it only covers a group of employees that are now retired. So the total amount of liability is known, and the issue is whether whether we go pay as you go, which is what we're doing now, or whether we should essentially fund it by paying more up front right now and less at the end, and there'd be some interest accumulation as well that would reduce the output. Because my personal view, the view of Maryland and the view of others, is that on these OPEB benefits, we got bigger fish out there to deal with in the annual budget rather than putting away 10 or 15 million a year to build up a trust fund to satisfy and pay out benefits that we know is we know what the total amount is, and so it's a fight that you'll hear about from time to time, and there's the other side is that the better accounting practice is to build up the trust fund so you know what you have and pay it off that way. But that's what it's all about. But it's a fixed amount of money, and it eventually, since these people are all retired and we're not accruing any new obligation for existing employees, will eventually be paid off. I hope that's responsive to your quickie lightning question.
And I'll just add briefly, you know, if you're fiscally solvent, it obviously makes sense to pay down a future liability now because you're going to reduce your cost over time. But prerequisite is if you're solvent. So to borrow to do that is probably not going to be your first order of business. However, moving forward, I think what's important about this liability moving forward, because the curve is phenomenal. If we are able to start adding a pre-funding to a trust for those post-employment benefits, we are going to save WMATA in the hundreds of millions of dollars over time. That's real money. That's important. However, it's tough to think about realizing those savings when you are insolvent today. So in order to maximize best practices, you get yourself solvent, and then you really aggressively attack that problem, because it can mean the future between incredible capital investments in the future and not. It's of that level of significance.
And to cap us off brilliantly, Bob.
Thank you.
This is the toughest question because he's an expert.
Yeah. You answered one of my questions already, Mike. We've heard a lot about the problems with the safety culture. I think problems with the customer service culture. Is there anything in the budget? Is there a line item in the budget or a assumption in the budget on training, on retraining Metro employees in the areas of safety and customer service to bring them up to a reasonable standard? Because at least in my view, that is a cheap way to improve customer satisfaction, by having Metro employees respond in a positive way to them.
I do not know, but we'll get you the answer.
But it is part of the CARE program for this upcoming year. And, Bob, I think we hear a lot from people who, provide or who have issues with Metro's customer service, and they exist all throughout the agency. But at the same time, I am really heartened, for example, with the response over the 20th and 21st of January, the number of positive comments that we heard from the helpfulness of Metro employees was really overwhelming, especially since I don't believe they had a training to really go over how they were going to deal with that weekend. It was really unknown what the demand was going to be before that weekend, and people kind of had to make it up as they went, and it appeared that there were, many employees who went above and beyond what they typically do in order to make that experience work well for everyone. So, I think the focus on customer service should also really try to figure out what are the assets that we have and how can we see that those become, learning experiences and learning tools for people throughout the agency, because clearly in some areas people do a phenomenal job. But then again, we hear frequently when folks fall short, and some of those stories and anecdotes are just mind-boggling, and I ride the system every day, both bus and rail, and I've seen some issues myself, and it drives me crazy.
All right, well, thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you. You all are a wonderful group to be with. Thank you.
Please like our Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
We all already did. Another board member, so please.
Now I know you got a Facebook page. I hope the rest of your agenda is as exciting as this hour. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for your help today. All done. All done with that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'd love to. Are your budget meetings open to the public?
Absolutely.
As well? Yes, I'd love to stop by. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, do we have anybody signed up in advance anyway for public comments?
We did not.
Do we have anybody who would like to sign up on the spot for public comments? Continuing on with the agenda, I will move on to the chair's report, and I will actually turn much of this over to Lorraine. I was out of town last week and not able to attend the board meeting, so Lorraine attended on behalf of the RAC.
Basically, most of the public comment was geared towards an issue with the pedestrian tunnel in Arlington County, in Pentagon City. That was the big issue that they were discussing, most of the people. I delivered our report, and there were no questions, so we were A-OK in that sense. So that was bottom line, that was a quick one.
On that, interesting on that pedestrian bridge and the accessibility of that bridge. I've been doing this for a little bit of time with the AAC, and that's the first time I'd ever heard about that bridge and the inaccessibility of the bridge. So I know that the AAC staff offices are going to go look into that and get a briefing on that, because we don't know where that came from. So that was a first for us. And then the other issues that dealt with bus access for low-income riders and that sort of thing was real consistent with what we've heard in the public hearings, what's been said in this committee, what's been said at my committee, and also what was said tonight. So that was real consistent. That was good. But the pedestrian bridge is a mystery to me.
Okay. So mystery pedestrian bridges aside, anything else that we need to report from the board meeting? I guess, did anybody else attend, just out of curiosity? They are through the day, but they are open to the public, so any of us are more than welcome to attend. Exactly how closely they match up with our subcommittees, but we are also welcome to attend those meetings, including the Budget and Finance Committee, as mentioned this evening. So, with that, then I will say the chair's report is done and move on to the chairs of the various subcommittees. Do we have any particular person who's jumping at the bit to go first, or we can go alphabetically, or Sawyer? Summarize kind of what you've done over the last month, and you provided some remarkably thorough minutes, so maybe give everybody an update on that. That was great.
The Safety and Security Committee met. We discussed our work plan for the coming year. There was a little bit of a transition period between the previous committee chair and coming in with the new members. So we went through the different action items to see what progress had been made and where we can move forward. A big push of this was to actually consolidate and get all of the current files that we have together in a shareable format so we can move forward and also have a collaborative space to work on our work plan. So I'll go into a couple of details on that. Our work plan for 2017 will include, obviously, our meetings, but then also various WMATA events and WMATA safety events, including their quarterly exercises, which the next one will be in late April 23rd, I believe. And also trying to integrate more safety and security committee members, as well as wider RAC members, if they're interested, to attend these different events with the exercises, different bus safety meetings. We even discussed the Respect Your Ride program for youth and safety that comes around that, as well as other outreach activities that were outlined by WMATA in their security report for the coming year. So just kind of have the eyes and ears on in those different events and those different meetings. So we're working right now to figure out when those will be happening. As far as different topic areas we're going to be looking at, that will include rail and train car safety. Right now, we're looking at the visibility of different emergency numbers, the different train numbers, and then also how the door mechanisms are working, given the recent manual and auto on that. Another category is rider and individual safety. You all know that a report, maybe you might know that a report was released. There were two, the security report and then the safety report. And in that report, also be looking at station and bus stop safety, looking at different maybe ground markers for doors to decrease rush through. A lot of other transit systems use these sorts of things. Just kind of looking at the feasibility of that, as well as increased station lighting, which we're looking forward to working hopefully jointly with the AAC on that as well. Other than that, looking at safety messaging for riders, looking at what is being put out on the website about safety, and if we can improve that messaging or rider training in any way. And also utilizing, hopefully, the RAP Facebook to promote these different ideas. Laundry list, and I'm sorry, but that's where we're at. We'll be working on finalizing the work plan and kind of figuring out what information requests we need from Joy and the Lamana staff to kind of keep this perspective that Mr. Dorsey is talking about to see if these are real issues we can dig into.
I'm so glad we didn't kill this committee.
Has anybody been selected to take the place of liaison with, as far as the emergency drills with Metro?
Yeah, so I'll be liaising with, there's a new Metro counterpart, mm-hmm. Who I've been put in contact with through Joy, and then it went through the gentleman that did it last year, and then he connected me with a new person.
Oh.
So I will be attending their next planning meeting, which will be March 30th. So I'll get more details then on how we can all participate.
Some things aren't going to be lived down. Any questions for Sawyer? All right. Moving, I guess we're going in reverse alphabetical order here. So P3. I waited just enough to take it long. Just attempt to slow you down.
Certain things that we're aspirationally trying to do is riders choose as inspired by donors choose, where hopefully riders can donate, if it's allowable, donate smart trip funds online or through Fairgates to fund WMATA sponsor or rider-created project proposals like funding track light projects, climate control, station display monitors, station phone chargers, television station, I don't know, things where riders could have input on the projects that they'd like to get funded with excess funds that they have on their smart trip card at the end of the month, maybe, or not. It's open to everyone, hopefully, including federal employees, but if that's allowable. There's also Earth Days coming up, and so is Bike to Work Day, Earth Day being April 22nd, and Bike to Work Day being May 19th, so potentially inviting WABA, the Washington Area Bicyclists Association, to see how it can better coordinate bicyclists in the Washington area and, you know, try to get them using Metro a lot more. Basically, there was a Washington Post article about the lights that are on the side of the tracks. Like right before you hit the tracks, there are those lights, and they're not on at all. And because we're not funny, I don't know what that's about. But if you're on, especially in the darker stations, it'll help with safety potentially. to do or not do. Really sharing what we're up to. So that's that. Metro Music or Metro Live, I know Paul Wiedenfeld has talked about, you know, playing music over the airwaves, and I think that was because of the holidays, I don't know. But if there were permits or different opportunities for local artists to come to stations to perform live instead of being recorded, whatever, that might be helpful. Also business competitions, hackathons, things like that, to get more writer-generated solutions, that would be free and potentially open a lot of ideas and solutions that might be actionable. And the RAC Twitter account, I think once we surpass 250 likes or some metric that the board approves, I think we should open a Twitter account. And I mean, our Facebook account hasn't precipitously, like, significantly increased or anything, so I don't really see Twitter doing the same thing either, but who knows, it might be just volatile, and we've all worked on Twitter, I think, but that's one thing. Driver, rider, manager of the month, just promoting rider rewards to incentivize, just can we pay people with credits on, or do things to invest more into the system through giving riders opportunities to be rewarded and to be recognized as station managers. There are a lot of other ones, but I'll stop there. They're getting labor and labor, but we're trying our best. Chairs, that's for internally. Chairs, if you guys could put like your meetings, like when they're happening every month on Facebook, like if you guys have programmed that yourself. Like so chairs will be responsible for it.
Chairs.
So
none of
them. See, that's another idea.
You could like
name
your chair.
Yeah. Oh my lord, that's a great idea. That is a great idea. That's a great idea.
You could like sit
or name the benches, like, or the Fairgate, or the like. That's amazing. No, I think that's a good idea. You don't know. Or the station cars. It's a name everything. Okay. Stop. I'm serious. We're gonna steal that.
I think we need another P on this committee for passion. No shortage of it there. Repeat it fourth at this point. One question for you. Given this laundry list of items, do you have any sense of like one a month or how you plan to address them, prioritizing? Or?
Yeah, so we're prioritizing based on, I think, we'd like your input also on this on terms of comments. It's basically it's me and Paul, and then put them on the text feed the last meeting, but are there any other people interested in the community, or if you plan to change, if you're going to be interested? That's another thing. Also, I think there are a lot of ideas, but definitely, if you would be interested.
I would, the only thing is, unfortunately, there's other things.
Exactly, if you're really going to take it, it's going to come out. At the same time, I know PPP and customer service or safety that happened last time, except it wasn't the same exact time, so it was like right after one another, and I thought that was the same thing, because we didn't change our time. I think safety, you guys change your business when you were when you everything's new. Like so you should change it so it's accessible to everyone and everyone's schedules. So yeah.
Just if I may.
Yeah. Wait, well, maybe sorry.
Given that you have no shortage of great ideas, or the energy to generate them, it seems. I wonder, and you're looking for input on price.
writing it down or whatever, you know, it's easier just to...
I'm only sort of what Lorraine said. I would encourage all the subcommittee, all the committees, to you know produce a work plan document that's shareable for those of us who. It's fine for some people love to use the internet and get look it up on. Some of us would like to have it just emailed to us. That would be useful. And the only other thing I would suggest, as you think about these things, is what are you asking for? And how do you expect the RAC to carry it out? You know, it's because this thing with the budget worked quite well, I think. You know, we agreed on a letter. We sent the letter out. We sent it to everybody who was breathing, you know, and in WMATA and on the board. And it seemed to have stuck. I think it's a model, and I think that we ought to think seriously. I mean, I'd rather see each committee produce two or three attainable kinds of goals that have consensus on the larger RAC that we can really move forward through the year. Because if those of you who are relatively new, the year goes by really quickly. We're a quarter of the way through already, I mean, based on the three meetings, you know. So I just suggest, only based on I was looking around, I've only been on the RAC for 2.5 years. I think I'm third in seniority. Or maybe fourth, if you include Catherine's two levels of suit. Yeah. But I just know that the year goes by quickly, and I just urge everybody to really focus on a couple of things. Let's figure out how we're going to get it over the goal line, and that's it.
Yeah, this first meeting was just trying to generate as many ideas and areas down. But definitely, once we get to
else for our passionate 3P committee.
Oh no, that was more than enough, I think, for now.
Enthusiasm is a wonderful thing at the end of a long day, that's for sure. Alright, then I will go to customer service.
Sure. We too have a laundry list of sorts. We've had a lot of good ideas generated, and I too will share our list of ideas, but in the process of having the members of the committee identify those that they feel passionate about and would like to champion in terms of background research, follow-up, developing documents, recommendations, things of that nature. So one of the holdovers from last year's customer service committee was some communication or mechanism by which Metro is reaching out to local jurisdictions to ensure that snow removal is done in a timely manner, especially around the bus stations and things of that nature. So Will is taking that upon himself to draft something that we can react to on that issue. A few other examples that com- committee members have identified as priorities amongst themselves are taking a second look at a secret shopper or rider program. You know, this is something that the Metro has done previously but has financed themselves. We had thought that there were likely to be many riders who would volunteer for something of that sort. Also taking a closer look at the call center and social media and how they currently interact with riders and how that might be improved. And to that end, Bob has reached out to WMATA and has been coordinating with Joy to see when we might be able to actually visit with those folks. And we have a few dates available when we could actually go out to the call center and kind of get a sense for what they do on a day-to-day basis. So those dates are March 10th, 15th, and 20th. And Bob, would you send you, if you want to say a few more words about that, or if you want to
add to that, is that we try to schedule, we ask them for agreements at 6 o'clock or later, because most of us have something to do during the day, right? The answer is no. So it has to be during the day.
9 to 4, I believe.
9 to 4 or something like that. So if we'd like to thank you for the participants as possible. It's out by Prince George's Plaza.
Oh, so that's Red Line, I believe. Is that one? No, no. Green Line. Thank you.
Green Line.
Yep.
Is it NetworkFest?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a software. There's a software. There's a software.
It is just Wobble.
Yep.
Okay.
We've got a day.
I believe we've got, let's see, the 10th is a, I don't even know what today is.
First.
10th is a Friday. 15th is a Wednesday, and the 20th is a Monday.
But is it all of those days, or is it always
changing? No, well, we can't pick one.
Okay.
So what I can do is I'll send around a doodle poll, and those of you who are interested can, you know, we need to turn around pretty quickly. So maybe like COB Friday, give me your responses.
Sorry, I'll just send you the answer, or the visibility. I don't know.
I wouldn't imagine it'll be more than an hour.
Well, I, you know.
Right.
Oh, yeah, right. Not counting transit time.
Yeah, and I think it's an opportunity to not just look, but ask the questions. The reality is, considering how long it's going to take her to get it back and spend there, it's probably 75 to get after her combo. But that's just my own.
Issues that we have long raised and get a better sense for what might be done to improve the situation.
Yeah, if you can't come, you can send probably some questions you have.
And then you know, one of the other issues is you know, something I've been harping on, which is encouraging WMATA to develop a back to good plan of sorts for customer service. That mirrors, you know, what they've done on safety and reliability. So, like I said, I'll send around the best of these ideas and, you know, welcome feedback. And any of you who want to participate in whatever capacity possible, we welcome it.
Bob mentioned private questions for the call center. Will they be able to get them in advance? Because you don't want to go there.
The goal of the board, we've heard from Mark Schofield, the director of finance. financial planning analysis at WMATA is it's going to be a little accelerated this year. So it's to have the board vote on a final budget by the end of March. So we need to make sure sort of all of our final input is into the board by then. So what we did is we invited Mark to our meeting this past month and sort of wanted to have a direct one-on-one dialogue with him in the committee, which went really well, I think, as you know, other members of the committee can chime in their thoughts. But we prepared for you essentially a summary, not verbatim, but paraphrased answers to all the questions that we had asked him from our letter. We also asked him a few other questions, but I just wanted to include the ones we had in our letter. And so without reading everything necessarily, just some highlights include senior fares. So he sort of clarified that senior fares will remain the formula that sort of calculates senior fares will remain the same. I think they're still thinking about metro access fares and how those will be impacted. But as far as Metro Bus and Metro Rail are concerned, seniors will sort of have to pay a little bit more as everyone else. He also clarified sort of how the bus routes were being considered for the docket, something that we heard today as well. And of course, I think he really emphasized that the board, the GM, and WMATA itself have really heard the message loud and clear from riders that they really don't want bus routes to be eliminated. And that even service cuts are something that they're very reluctant to do now. And that was definitely reassuring to hear. He talked a little bit about WMATA's long-term strategy for increasing ridership, which was positive and, you know, trying to tackle some of the more existential problems with regards to safety, reliability, single tracking, and trying to essentially win back riders over the next few years. In question number six, you know, he answered our concerns about the cutting 1,000 positions at WMATA and how that might impact customer service. Apparently 200 of those positions will be more management staff and people in offices here at WMATA headquarters, so people who don't really interact with riders day to day. The remaining 300 people who are going to be laid off, they said are going to be bus and rail operators, but that's contingent on exactly which bus routes they cut, which trains they decide to curtail, and of what the extent of those changes are. So that's something to keep in mind. And the final question, which I thought was very interesting, is this question of sort of flat fares, which we talked about last year. Apparently, I think the Mark and the rest of the department are of the opinion that the current model is pretty efficient, and if we were to go to some sort of flat fare, the rate would have to be somewhere around $3.50 to break even. Which was an interesting statistic. So these are just two things to keep in mind, the things that will inform our conversations and thoughts going forward. As for our work plan and ideas that kind of we want to tackle later on, obviously meeting with the board staff and trying to get our final recommendations in, it will be especially interesting to hear what their plan is for low-income riders that they sort of mentioned today that we should keep our eyes out for. And so, chiming into that, offering input where we can offer it. In addition, going forward, once the budget is passed, I think we really want to, try to be advocates for dedicated funding for the Metro and increasing Metro's resources there, and then presenting ideas for additional, sources of revenue. These are all things that we want to try to do alongside inviting staff for a meeting. I think that's it for budget, unless anyone else from the committee wants to comment.
Oh, I have a question.
Yeah.
I know we had a little internal debate, which was healthy. And I know about the posting of the letter that we sent to the board.
Sure. Yeah.
I know we didn't want to, obviously, because
yeah.
We didn't want to pressure the board, make them feel intimidated or anything like that.
It's not fair.
When we might be able to,
it's all right. That's a great question. We can, I can get in touch with them. I mean, I think a lot of the questions have already been answered, and sort of a lot of the questions they already touched upon today, anyway. But we can. I think it's good, as we asked for in the letter itself. It would be good if they could respond
in writing to at least some of our other concerns that were shared in the letter. So,
you guys think it might be worth posting this, or is this like obviously this is like our version of it? So
it's not, yeah, right?
You on the spot a little bit and ask if you want to give us any updates about our sister committee, about the AAC.
Well, I think two things going on with the AAC. I would say we have an RFP on the street, as was mentioned earlier, with respect to paratransit, looking to do a combination of, let's say, Uber and Lyft for same-day service. I was fascinated tonight when they talked about the bus, particularly the bus routes, and how those routes were going to, the fares that were going to be charged, or fare increases, and they were going to be mindful of individuals who are low income. How that is going to affect particularly the Metro Access ridership is very important, because the Metro Access ridership is going to be twice the bus and rail combination. So if you raise the fares on bus and rail, you really feel it on Metro Access. So we've done a lot of campaigning, a lot of education, a lot of inquiry back and forth on what's going to happen with the Metro Access system with respect to the fares. One of the things that we did discover was that Metro Access, the ridership, and this has been one of the things we've been tracking, the ridership is not exploding as was suggested that it would, and the income for the Metro Access program is up somewhat. So we're hoping that with the budget, any budget increase, the Metro Access will be left with very little increase, if any increase at all. So I was pleased to hear that tonight. The other things that we are interested, that we've been working on, have to do with the, as far as the safety, safety issue, the exercises that go on, the waivers that are that need to be signed for the for those exercises. You've got individuals who are disabled, who have wheelchairs, other items that, that could be damaged during these exercises, and folks don't want to sign the waivers because they basically take the expense for their own equipment in their own hands if they're damaged during one of these exercises. So we are now talking with the general manager as to is, can we have some limited liability that WMATA, if something's damaged, they would pick up some of the costs. Those are a couple of the things we're very much interested in, very much like I think the budget is number one. The other areas that we are tracking have to do with pedestrian access, access to bus stops, sidewalks, that sort of thing, and then also the lighting project that we've been working on for the last few years. We do see that going along at a fairly steady pace. Lights are improving in the subway system. We are focused on that through folks that have low vision, and we find that, that they have a very good impact when we're presenting that story in front of the board. So we're pleased with the support we're getting with the board. One last thing that we did accomplish over the last couple months, the deaf community has been they've been frustrated over the last couple of years because the lack of communication within the station between station managers and the deaf community. So we have instituted within the rail stations whiteboards that allow two-way communication between the deaf community and station managers. Very low-tech solution. That's also going to be expanded to the bus system. It took about maybe 4 to 6 months for us to get that through, get it implemented. But from what I hear, these whiteboards are now involved in all the are there in all the stations. Managers are being trained on how to use them. It's good two-way communication with the deaf community, so we're pleased about that. So those are kind of the initiatives we have, and very much like the rest of the groups that are have presented tonight, we have work plans that we are working through. We're pretty much in the same position as what are we going to accomplish for this particular year? What's number one, number two, one, number three priority? So, questions for me?
Actually, yes, there are several. You've got a bunch of vertical nameplates on that. So I will start with Will. I saw you first.
We'll teach you all what lightning round means. No, I'm not done, ever. Patrick. This is Will Patrick. Question for you. Have you heard anything or any responses back from the last time we were communicating about the service dogs in the exercises, the emergency exercises?
We have not heard anything more about that. That's all part of the outreach that we want to see happen more to the disability community. I think that within my community, within my committee, we have maybe two or three people that use guide dogs. Not what we would like to see as far as the community at large and the outreach at large. So there has been more of a attempt to get blind people that have service animals into the exercises. I think that what we learned from the last exercise was that we would probably want to have more and better information going into the exercise, because I think a guide dog walking through the tracks or along the sides on the ledges, whatever, would have been very problematic. Then that would have been highly stressful for any kind of guide dog. One of the things I will say with respect to that, the exercise, is that within Maryland, D.C. and Virginia, you have professionals who are working in those jurisdictions who are both disabled, worked in the paramedic and firefighter community, who have been disabled now and do use guide dogs. So they have been communicating with WMATA with respect to safety
and what can be expected and what they should look out for, and trying to drill home to WMATA, these are the lessons you need to learn and bring from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. What we're finding is that every time that there seems to be an exercise, it's like none of the lessons learned have been transmitted to the new jurisdiction. It's like they've never run across these issues before. That's frustrating. I think the RAC has also seen some of that, but we certainly see that within the disability community. It's like, oh, wow, a deaf person, what do we do now? Or, oh, wow, a blind person with a service animal, what are we going to do with that? You know, so it's frustrating, but it's valuable. We need to show up, and we need to show up in greater numbers.
$650.
Yeah, the $650 maximum that's already charged is essentially as high as they're comfortable going in the foreseeable future.
See, that it helps for me to be on time, huh? That's great. No, I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And obviously, you know, they didn't rule out small, you know, 5-cent increases here and there, but any major increases, they said they're really not.
Although, just a quick clarification on that: when he was talking about those maximum prices, I think he was talking about the maximum possible rail prices that currently exist.
That's right. But I think he also
Metro Access tops out at $650.
So if Metro, yes, and that's extremely important to the group that I work with, because fares at $650 is, I mean, if we can keep the fares within the range and not to exceed $650, that's absolutely huge. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
I don't know what they will do, but
that,
I think they're hesitant to make any big changes.
I think that just so that this group understands where AAC had come down, very much like this group, and I think it's great, is that they feel that bus service, and I think we all stress bus, was critical. And they would rather see a little bit of an increase on bus in order to save the service rather than cut the bus service and retain the fares at the lower rate. But so we'll see what happens. But it's nice. And I see this more often, a lot more, when RAC and AAC are going to the board with the same message. Our focus is a little bit different, but the message is the same, and that's very powerful. So appreciate the update on the Metro Access piece. It's something we've been working on for at least 6 to 8 months, so that's good to hear. Great, thank you.
There
has. The issue was that the way the cars had been coupled, there was a gap between the cars, and actually someone who was visually impaired mistook the gap for the floor, walked in between the cars, fell on the tracks. He was rescued, but I think that really helped to educate WMATA. What they ended up doing, and they had actually instituted this before that incident, but they sped up what they were going to do. What they did was to take the between car barriers that they had, and they, rather than putting chains between the cars as they did, they implemented and put these plastic pieces in between the cars so that the cars could still turn or move or whatever. But if you're visually impaired and you're walking and you're using your cane to figure out are you at an entrance or what, you'd be able to hit this plastic piece rather than that chain that was, let's say, at waist level or hip level or something, because by the time you hit that chain and take that first step, you could be on the tracks. That was the short-term fix. The longer-term fix is they talk to the manufacturer, and they have all the cars that are coming in now, the 7,000 series cars, will have those pieces as part of the standard as part of the standard pieces between the cars, so that will be a non-issue. The reason why this is important is because in the past with the 5,000, 6,000 cars, 4,000, they had instituted the between car door barriers like a accordion piece. And so over time, people with disability, low vision folks like myself who use a cane would not inadvertently recognize the spot in between two cars as, you know, a lighted area, let's say a car floor where you kind of rushing to get in. You don't use your cane properly and you just step down and the next thing you know, you're on the tracks. So a little bit scary. I've had that happen to me before where I've had my briefcase in one hand, my cell phone in the other, not really using my cane properly and just take that step. And, you know, it's bad. It's tragic. But I haven't fallen. But they change the barriers between the cars so that they are more like they were 2 years ago. And that has helped the disability, particularly the blindness community. So another thing that happened last year. And that's good. Good progress.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Okay.
Patrick, if you could let, this is Lorraine, if you could let me know when, if you have that meeting with Chairman Evans regarding the Pentagon City.
Oh, yeah.
Let me know, since I represent Arlington, I would like to attend and see, you know.
Yes, thank you for reminding me. I haven't gotten caught in my email. Is Joy still here?
I'm here, sir.
Joy, so B was going to set that up. B was going to be informed as to when that meeting was going to be held by the ADAPT group. And so if you talk to B, I'm sure she'll let you'd let RAC know and she can let me know. The ADAPT folks who were interested in the tunnel, its accessibility and that whole process, this was the first, as I said earlier, that we had heard about it. And I was surprised. I thought I was just uninformed, but I think everyone was kind of surprised, except maybe ADAPT knew about it. This would be their meeting, and I certainly appreciate their point of view and agree wholeheartedly with what they have to say. So we would love to have RAC participation. I wouldn't want to run the meeting because, once again, it's ADAPT's meeting, but the more the merrier. I think that'd be good.
I just mentioned it to Mr. Dorsey, who represents Arlington, so that he was aware. And that depending on scheduling, obviously, he might be interested also in participating. It's regarding the issue is the pedestrian tunnel, a new pedestrian tunnel at the Pentagon City Metro Station that is not going to be accessible.
Okay.
And I guess
it's basically concrete steps. There's not escalators and no elevators on that side. So,
Okay.
Great. So B may have some more information on that also. Yeah.
Good.
Thanks.
Okay. Then I am going to, before finalizing this meeting, I am going to issue, I guess, a bit of a challenge to my vice chairs who are sitting up here in the front with me. One of the things that I know that we want to try to do over the next year, hopefully at least once, potentially more than that, depending on everybody's jurisdiction, is for each jurisdiction to be able to meet with the board members who represent their jurisdiction. So instead of just having the board members come one or two at a time to our board meetings so that all the Maryland folks can sit down with the Maryland board members, et cetera. It's happened a handful of times in the past on somewhat of a sporadic basis, but I'm hoping that we can actually pull it off this year, again, at least once, hopefully maybe once every 6 months. Wild and crazy. Okay. That sounds great. I think that'll, I don't know if it wonders exactly, but that will help to make sure that the board is aware of the RAC and that we're not just some nameless, faceless people that they have to check off as a box, but that we are actually somewhat useful, or at least have the potential to be useful. If it were truly DC, they'd go to a protest. forward to having the chance to meet with whoever your board members are. Any further announcements that anybody wants to make, either Joy or anybody else? Yeah, Sawyer.
I just had a quick clarification. So for the work plan circulation, I'm wondering if the chair sending out, say, 5 different emails with the different work plans would be better or worse than us sending that maybe to you or someone else to consolidate into one, so we know exactly where they're at to reference them. I'm just thinking ours is kind of similar to the short URL. It's an editable Google document, so I'm just trying to think through that process because I don't want to pepper people's inboxes, but then yet have it kind of consolidated. So just wanted to throw it out there.
Just in the announcement category, brief advertisement. I happen to be on the WAMU, W-A-M-U, site, and it's the local PBS or NPR news station. WAMU actually has a game on there. Pretend you're a low-income person and ride WMATA for a week. And it's very hard to win. I haven't won yet. But I put that forward, both because it's a reality check, but also it does help promote that idea that WMATA doesn't work for folks. And we might want to think about that in our long-term strategy. Is there a game that we can do where it shows WMATA works for folks or something? I don't know. I just think it's important to know that that's out there affecting people's perceptions of WMATA.
Okay. Will?
Sorry. Just a suggestion. Going back to the lightning rounds, maybe we can install the clock as part of the lightning round and show them what it really means.
Slam.
Yeah, I'm just playing.
Oh, I'm sitting here looking at the back of it during this thing. That might be helpful.
Right.
Sure. Not to bring up a sour note, but I heard, do we have some resignations on the council, according to your email?
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure.
So, you know, obviously, I've had to go back out. I mean, I think I have someone from Montgomery already, and I think that's a really good candidate that didn't make it the last time. I'm going to go back.
Okay.
And then PG County poses a bit of a different issue, and so I'm really scouring the pool. So, you know, the goal really is to get that done by that March 23rd meeting so they can vote. So just know I'm working on that and going to be, you know, set up interviews and that sort of thing for a similar type of personalities. To,
I'm not sure if you have any independence.
Well, for reality, I think I'm good. So I'm just trying to understand, you know, the short economy, so to the extent I can do a big, you know, advertisement and things like that. I'm just kind of trying to come up with some low-hanging fruit opportunities to make a push if we need to.
Facebook. Ah, sounds like a Facebook post. Yeah. Wait, then.
Right, the Facebook. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
There's other social media, especially local community, that I'm tied into. So since I'm part of Prince George's County, I'll do some promotion. If you want to give me some verbiage that you might want me to send, then I can report that on.
Yeah.